Welcome to the Gain and Fast on Memphis podcast with Aaron Shriver, brought to you by Arlo Revolution. Each week, Aaron connects melodies and memories with fans and artists from all genres of life. When all else in life is gone, only music will be left to leave the legacy of life's adventures. Please welcome your host for the Gain and Fast on Memphis podcast, Aaron Shriver.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight? Why am I all right? Was that? Let me know if you guys hear anything out there tonight. Make sure everything's up and running. Someone says, I hear talking. Hello, congratulations. Hey, what's up, guys? Everything's up and running? Cool, cool. So welcome, guys, to the show. Oh, man, I'm excited for tonight. This is going to be a fun one. Guys, I was just kind of briefly talking with tonight's guest, and boy, ooh. So before we go any farther, though, welcome to Season 3, Episode 61 of the Gaining Fast on Memphis podcast. It's a place where we connect melodies and memories with both fans, artists, and some of the most interesting people in and around the music community. I'm your host, Aaron Shriver. Tonight, we are presented by our good friends over at Arlo Revolution. Cinematic wedding films, music videos, and promos. Find them at arlorevolution.com. Our on-screen sponsors. Making sure everybody's good to go. Our on-screen sponsors tonight, as every week, Art on a Horror Wire by Joel. Original custom artwork inspired by your life moments. Treasured photos and memories. You can find them all over Facebook, as well as Corey Oliphant and the original OC. We're honored to have Corey and the OC every week as our weekly sponsor, seeing that the show kicked off with the original church choir. And I mean, it keeps going with them. We're going to have another one this season. So it's really great to have them. If you guys are looking to sponsor the show, we do have two more sponsorships left that you can go ahead and check out on our Patreon. I'll share the link here in the comments. Because you're going to need that link for later on, too, because we're going to have a nice little after show tonight. So you guys got to definitely check out that as part of the Patreon. Go ahead and grab that link for you guys real quick. So we do have my wife filling in tonight as co-producer again. So let's see what happens. I'm trying to help her out. You all right over there? You freaking out yet? No? You hanging in there? So shout out to JC. I'm sure he'll be back next week. Go ahead and get that link out. All right, we got that up going. But yeah, if you guys are looking for ways to support the show, as we do talk about, our Patreon every week is our heart and soul of the show. Check out the link that we shared. Awesome after shows coming up this month. And I cannot wait. Just amazing shows that we have. Kicking off tonight with LV. Next week, we got, man, Jade Eagleson's coming on from Canada next week. Another amazing one. But if you guys are looking for other ways to support the show, like, share, and subscribe anywhere you can. We are live right now on Facebook and YouTube. So if you're listening to this back on a sharing site or a streaming site, join us on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock. Ask questions, interact with the artists. It's a great time. Fill up the chat room, then listen to it back a day or two later. So it's great times. But once again, if you guys are part of that Patreon, we are trying to hit 100 Patreons goals. So we're about 36 people away. And we do have our giveaway this one tonight. So we're going to hurry up and grab a name. And then we're going to move on and get our guest on and have some fun. Grab me that bowl. I sat down and I was like, nope, I forgot to grab that and I'm not getting out of this chair. Thank you. Actually, I got a friend in the studio tonight too, or my basement, not studio, but a friend from work came over, Joe, and checked things out. It's going to be a good time. All right, let's see who won this time. Brandy. All right, Brandy, I'll reach out tomorrow. And we'll get you this month's prize pack. Awesome. And our Jeremy Spillman book, Jim Mazza prints, and our church merch gift card. Just some good stuff. I'm going to try to go all out next month or this month. We'll see what happens. So, all right, guys. Well, I've been excited and waiting for this ever since I reached out to this guy a while ago. Jeff Brown is a personal friend of mine about 3-4 months ago or so. I think he dropped this song called My Boy on my lap. And I was like, whoa, I was just blown away by it. I couldn't believe it. And it has since then just taken over. But this guy is just more than that song. I've actually first heard of LV about 4 years ago when he was on American Idol. And just watching him grow so far in his path that he's been taking has just been phenomenal. So I cannot wait to bring him on and talk to him. So if you guys are ready, let's go ahead and bring him on. Yeah. Yeah, you go ahead. We our board's all messed up today. That's not even the right sound. We'll fix that later. We gotta fix that later. Sorry about that. What's up, dude? You got some cool intro music though.
Oh, I'm on here. I didn't know if I was in here or not. What's up, man?
Can you slide that up a little bit? That slider.
Yeah,
Yeah, that one. Sorry, buddy. Let's just go ahead and get your audio. Go ahead a little more, babe. There we go.
There I am.
Yeah, there you go. Right there. Cool. I want to get your audio up and going. So, yeah, some weird, funky sounds to kick you off. So, I love that. So, well, welcome to the show, man. I'm honored to have you on. Like I said, I first heard of you in 2016 when you're on American Idol. And it was really cool because my wife and I'm glad she's sitting in with me because her and I, she's my American Idol watcher. So the minute I'm like, dude, that was a guy from like 4 years ago. You remember this. And so it was really cool to be able to talk to you. But man, I want to start off and just know your journey, man, where you're from and what got you into music, dude.
Oh man, I've been in music since I can remember. I grew up in Caneyville, Kentucky, a real small town, just about, well, we're a spoke in the wheel, man. We're about 45 minutes from Bowling Green, Elizabethtown, or Owensboro. The only thing that runs through Caneyville is an interstate highway. They call it Corridor 69. Now, we always called it Western Kentucky Parkway. But, no, man, I would, you know, my mom likes to say I was born on a Sunday. The following Sunday, she had me held tightly beside a hymnal in church. And my dad, we would get home from church, and I'd be hanging out with my pops outside, you know, a few beer cans laying around the driveway, Steve Earle or John Fogerty pouring out of the windows of some old junk Ford pickup truck or car that he was working on at the time. So I got a good mixture of both worlds, you know.
Guys, if you guys are in the chat, let me know if the audio is good yet. I know I had to raise it up just a little bit. So that's all you guys think. I'm trying to see, man. I'm getting old, dude. I just got prescription glasses today. They're gonna be in the
Coming
in 7 days. And I can't see my screen at all, so I'm like, hopefully by next week I'll be able to see.
That's like, dude, I'm telling you, I'm 32 years old. I think I was way too rough on myself in my early 20s. I got the body of a 64 year old sometimes. It's ridiculous.
Let's see, what'd you say? Is his volume still down? That's your headphones. Sorry, dude.
Oh, you're good, dude.
Phil, and I just want to make sure everything. This is the advantages of going live. Everything always get your sound issues. All right, everybody's saying good in the chat. So, yeah, we're good to roll. All right, cool, cool.
All right.
Good deal. Let us know, guys. We are kind of – yeah, I can't. I just see something about volume. It's all blurry.
Yeah, yeah.
So, coming from Kentucky, small town, you were raised on country. I mean, what was your parents listening to? I mean, where were you – what was
my mom, dude? I just did a little radio interview with one of the local stations that I listened to growing up in Owensboro, Kentucky. And when I was signing off, my brother called me and he was like, dude, I love the way you got off that. He said, thanks for cutting my teeth in the backseat of a Ford Taurus on 90s country, you know. So mom was listening to 90s country a lot. My dad was much more of a, you know, 80s, late 80s, like Steve Earle being probably his number one, Dwight Yoakam. And he came from Southern Rock, Lynyrd Skynyrd. And not only that, but my dad liked, you know, the Temptations and Otis Redding and stuff like that too. So a lot of soul, a lot of blues, a lot of rock, and a lot of 90s country. And then, of course, gospel hymnals. I don't know much about the contemporary gospel world, but I can sing a hymnal or three.
Were you did you mess with my headphones? Now my headphones are down. She doesn't know what she's doing. We're gonna roll with this.
Get them.
Did I read somewhere that you were a preacher for a little bit?
Yeah, man. So I was 18 years old. I had just graduated high school, and my brother had just owned his calling to preach, and I was just running into a lot of trouble, and I was like, well, maybe that's what I need to do with my life too. I need to be a preacher. So I went after it, and you know, I gave it 100%. But I realized that I wasn't really believing a lot of what I was teaching. I was only teaching or preaching things that I had been told growing up. And I remember being really young and visiting one of my friends' churches and being like, well, if they think they're this right, but they're saying something different than I hear at my church on Sunday, and we think we're right. There's always been, well, if everybody thinks they're right, then who's right? Mm-hmm. And I hadn't figured that out for myself yet. So that led me to believing that I shouldn't be up there doing that job, that I might be doing more harm than good. So I've been on a journey ever since.
Well, now, I compare singing and writing to preaching in a way. I mean, we were briefly talking about Eric Church. I'm a huge Eric Church fan, so I'll say that's my church in a way. But I would think what you're still doing, you're still preaching in a way, just maybe not on the religious side of things, but we're still connecting with a message from you. I mean, that you're bringing out.
Dude, I wholeheartedly believe the Lord's using me in some way. I mean, this song, you know, look at this song. And we've always called this song a God song. Since the day me and the three other writers on the song sit on the back porch and wrote this song, hugging each other and crying, writing this song that evoked emotion in the writing process, we've said this is a God song. We can't take credit for this song. And it's been viral on different social media outlets multiple times. That's nothing I did. You know, we just put the video up. The rest of it, I feel like, was definitely some divine intervention.
I can't read my own notes. I need these damn glasses like yesterday. Look down. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and talk about that. So I want to talk about kind of when it first came about. How long ago did you write this song? I just want to kind of take the journey on this song.
If I'm not mistaken, we wrote this song June 30th, 2016.
Oh, that's funny as hell. My birthday is June 29th.
Oh, day after.
Yeah. Day after me. So it's about 4 years old, man. And so, I mean, that's normal for a song, dude. It's kind of till it sees day of light. A lot of people don't understand they're like, oh, yeah, you write a song and 2 months later it's on the radio now.
that's not the case. You know, that song that Luke Combs has got out right now, Better Together, I was just listening to him on the Meat Eater podcast the other day. I'm a podcast junkie, so I've been listening to yours all day in preparation and really enjoyed it. But he was talking about how they wrote that song in 2018. You know, that was 2 years ago, and now you're just now seeing it. And hell, dude, I got songs recorded right now, finished, that you're probably not going to hear until late 2021, maybe even early 2022. It's just, it takes time.
Yeah. And definitely, I see a lot of artists writing or releasing stuff now. You're working on some music, I know. Are you planning on releasing it anytime soon? Or are you kind of waiting off? Because I know some people like to tour. When they drop an album, they want to get on tour. I mean, you're a guy that loves live shows, I'm sure. How for you to drop new music and not be able to play it live?
Man, it's been kind of brutal. But there's two schools of thought here. One being that, you know, keep throwing content out to people because you can't keep people's attention for very long.
Yeah.
You know, so just constantly, if you can constantly give them content, then hell yeah. The other school of thought is, you know, take this one song. This is the one we're kind of following right now. We put My Boy out. People are responding to it. Why would I want to take away from the song that we have out right now with the response we're getting to it? You know, with another song that I've worked really hard on, I don't want to throw another song out there for people to hear it for a couple of weeks and be like, oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
To the next thing, you know? So,
and My Boy's not a song that's going to get stale fast. I mean, you'll get some of these songs that will get out there and they'll be like top 10, top 20 songs. And I feel like they have a shelf life at times. I don't think My Boy is a song with a shelf life. I think that's going to be a song that's going to be around a long time after we are. And it's going to leave a message, man. So when you wrote it 4 years ago, of course, was your son 5 years old at the time?
He was, let's see. Caleb was, that was 4 years ago. So he would have been 9 or 10 years old.
All right. So your story was you met his mom and you just knew you kind of had cleaned some stuff up. And because she was kind of the lady that you knew wasn't going to date someone that was, you're on the path you're on. You had to change your path. And then you met him. Who changed you more, do you think? The boy or the wife?
Man, I would have to say it was a collective. Don't get me wrong. So we know I grew up in church. The rule of thumb from the belief that I come from is God first, spouse second, children after spouse. And, you know, so my wife is the most important person in the world to me. But had it not been for her having that child, and me being just so taken aback by her being interested in me, like I think Caleb was definitely the icing on the cake for me to be like, dude, you got to straighten your life up. You're falling in love with this woman. Mm-hmm. She has a child, and you have to be something that this child can possibly look up to. And I'm always striving for that goal. I still to this day don't feel like I've met it the way I would like to, but yeah, we're trying.
As parents, man, we learn every day. I'm sure my wife could agree. There's something different every day. And now she's sprinkling sparkle stuff on poop for kids to go to the bathroom, dude. It's, every day is something different that we're learning. But so yeah. You wrote that song. Did you have a feeling that it would fruition into what it is today, or what it would get into, or were you just hoping?
Man, I had no idea. So we were sitting on the porch, and I'm not much of a beer drinker, so I was kind of babysitting the Coors Light, but my buddy Russell Sutton and Lee Starr and Nick Columbia, the other writers, it was just me, Russell, and Nick Columbia, because we had a write schedule that afternoon. We were just hanging out on the porch before our write and getting amped up to write a song, and Lee Starr had been doing something in the studio at the house, and he was trying to sneak out of there, and I'm definitely giving you the long end answer here, but Lee comes out the door to tell us that he's hitting the road, and Russell Sutton strategically places a guitar in Lee's hand and says, "Hey, hang on to this for a second. I'm going to go in the house and grab another beer." By the time Russell gets back out there, Russell's like looking at me through the window in the kitchen. Like, you know, he comes back outside, Lee's over there playing this riff on guitar. And I'm like, oh boy. He's in it now. He ain't going nowhere. But you put a guitar in Lee's hand and he's going to play it, right? So, yeah. Well, we started talking about, you know, we wanted to write about something that mattered that night. And a friend of mine's mom had sent me a post on Facebook the night before. It said, "I don't have a stepson. I have a son that was born before I met him." And I was like, damn,
yeah.
that hits home. And so I told him about that. And Nick Columbia looked at me and Lee's over here messing around with this lick, and Nick's just like, "Well, dude, tell me about your son." I was like, "Dude, he's my boy." And he said, "Whoa, right there. That's it. Let's write that." So, we dug into it. And when we wrote it the next morning, I remember Russell coming outside playing his guitar and his flame covered, like, pajama pants. I've got a pair of Gilmore Girl ones myself. I don't wear where anybody can see me, but my wife's grandma got them for me for Christmas last year. I love it. But no, he walks out there smoking a cigarette in his flame covered pajama pants and a t-shirt, and he's just like, "Elvie, I don't know if we know what we did last night." And I was like, "Well, I don't know, man. I mean, I love the song." And it would be a couple years of a lot of ups and downs, and here's our moment, and oh no, it's gone. But you know, yeah. It was a couple years before we seen anything come of. We had no idea how impactful it was going to be on our lives and the lives of others.
So when it hit, or when it with it hitting TikTok, which has probably been one of the biggest outlets for it, would you think so? As of right now, probably the way it's going up now. Did your team approach TikTok like, "Hey, let's throw it up there"? Or did you actually get approached by your team saying, "Hey, look at these videos that these people are putting together"?
Yeah, dude, it was so cool. So when the song first came out back in July, I think there were some influencers or something that had got a hold of it and put it up, and it didn't do anything. Like, it was just kind of like, oh, here's, you know, their regular viewers seeing the song. And then we go through the summer, and radio tour was this questionable thing. Like, is this even going to happen?
Yeah.
And my team presents me with this idea of like this 7-week-long, five shows a day, 5 days a week virtual radio tour that we ended up doing. And it was incredible. The best 9-to-5 I've ever had in my life. But we did it all leading up to the official terrestrial radio release date, which was, I think, September 21st. Mm-hmm. The week before September 21st, man, it was like Step Parent Day. Oh, somebody posts a video of this guy and his girlfriend's, it was the girlfriend video on it, this guy and her son listening to this song, and you could see the boy being emotionally moved in this video on TikTok, and it exploded, you know, which brings me back to some divine intervention there, man. A week before we had our, you know, date to go to radio, which mm-hmm. I can't think of what they call that right now. But anyway.
The drop date, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, dude, it was so cool to see. And then it was one video after another, you know, multiple videos out there with millions of views and thousands, tens of thousands of comments. And it was just really incredible to see. Oh, there's my dog, man. That's the I love that dog to death, man. That is the best dog in the world.
That's your other boy.
That's my girl. That's your girl.
There you go. Wait, well, speaking of that, I mean, that's a good transition. So now, all of a sudden, this week, you dropped My Girl. Tell me about that. I mean, it was just a man, do you think, for that side of it?
So we knew coming into the release of this song that was going to be an issue. We'd been talking about that since, you know, a couple years after we wrote the song. And somebody's a huge Russell Sutton fan. Yeah, me too.
I actually texted one of my buddies today. I wanted to see the name of that song. That's why I saw that comment. And I was like, dude, I just heard this song by this guy. And I'm like, it's the best ever. I forgot what it was.
Dude, Russell is definitely a brilliant mind. And he comes from Texas. And anybody from Texas is all right with me. I forgot what was I?
Johnson always is interrupting us about something.
It's all good, dude. Hey, man,
The Day I Met Her by Russell Sutton. That was the song I was thinking of.
Oh my God. Yeah. The Day I Met Her is an amazing song. He's got a bunch of them though. He's Mama's Bible and Daddy's Belt is one that is just, it kills me, man. Kills me.
I think a little bit about TikTok and about how the step parents were kind of, was being presented about their kids were showing them this and they're getting reactions by it. And it kind of reminded me of like the videos where you see like the soldier coming home from war and stuff. And then you're right up there with that and just seeing it go viral. And I mean, when it took off, you just like, oh man, this is gonna be a crazy ride. This one song is just going to blow up. But now, I mean, just your music, like you always have that one song. Were you ever worried about maybe possibly, okay, this, I don't want to be a one hit wonder. I don't want it to be too big, but have you ever worried about maybe that at all? If it gets you, or you just want that message just to be out there,
dude. Absolutely, man. There's, I think it's almost crucial. Well, I know it's crucial for me to have a healthy amount of doubt associated with my songs and the way I present my songs. I mean, I'm listening to my stuff, and I'm listening to what's out there, and I'm like, yeah, man, is it gonna work? Even when we finished My Boy, when we were finishing My Boy, like, I had to fight tooth and nail a little bit with a few people to get My Boy to be as acoustic as it is in the first part of the song. And I was like, guys, it has to be that way. Like the focus of this song in particular, the main focus of this song, if there ever was one, is what it's saying. And we got to let there be room for the words to come through the mix. And but definitely, man, I'm hearing a lot of great stuff. But
if you guys are fans of Elvie and heard his music, he's not going to be a wonder at all. He has songs that's going to probably blow My Boy away. I mean, there's songs that I've been singing in my head all day that I just can't get out. One of them I hope I'm going to get you to do sometimes on the after show because I just love that song.
Oh, Lord.
But, dude, you got to do that one because I love that one. I was looking at the pictures. We'll talk about that one a little bit. So, like, when you come and have, like, a song like this and has just a following, how do you follow up? Are you thinking about follow-up yet? Or are you just saying, let's just keep going with this right now because it's doing so well?
Man, I did not want to put My Boy out as my first single. And I'm being 100% honest. I don't think I ever said anything to my record label about it, especially John Loba, who signed me over at BBR. I don't think I ever said anything about me not wanting to put that out first because he was so passionate in his belief in this song. And I was just like worried to death that how am I going to follow this heartfelt song about my love for this kid that came into my life with these rowdy, you know, kind of white trashy stories and images that are to follow. And then what I realize and people in my team help me realize and co-writers help me realize is that like all of that is part of the same person. And that person definitely is coming through in those songs. But I got to say, I didn't want to put it out, but 2020 happened.
Yeah.
And COVID happened and racial tension and social unrest. And there's so much negativity out in the world, man. And I started getting fired up to put My Boy out. I was like, dude, if we can put a song out there that just can distract – don't get me wrong. There's things that we don't need to be distracted from right now that we need to act on and we need to make better within our country, within the world. But I was just hoping that we could put this song out there and it would distract people for a few minutes at a time from all the bullshit. And man, what I'm seeing is it's distracting people every now and then from all the bullshit.
We need a breath of fresh air every now and then. Yeah, because I live literally 7 minutes from Kenosha, Wisconsin, where all that stuff was going on. And but it was like happening right in my backyard with everything. So when you hear a song that comes out and stands above all the other songs, it's a breath of fresh air, because for those 3 minutes or 4 minutes, it takes your mind away from all the BS and kind of, man, puts you a smile on your face. And so this is a good feel-good song. And so that's why I'm glad it's doing so well, man. Because it's just a song that I think, like I said before, it's going to be long gone after you and I are gone and everything else. That song is still going to be around because it just resonates with people on things. Because, I mean, there's no real step parent. Because if you're going to step in and be the parent, you're the parent. That's how I always have felt. I mean, just from my end.
Yeah, man, I get it. I've had so many people reach out in so many different ways that they've connected with the song. One guy in particular kind of blew me away he was messaging me so much on Facebook. He was cool. But I was just like, dude, just call me. I want to actually talk to you. So I send him my number on Facebook Messenger. He calls me. He's like, man, I just want to let you know, my wife and I are divorced. I've got an 8-year-old little boy. I think he said he was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. He said she remarried this guy. I said, he was like, she hates my guts, but this dude is a great stepfather to my child. And I sent your song over to him because I wanted him to know that I see that he feels that way about my kid, and I enjoy that, you know. So that one got me.
It's cool, yeah, to see people like that connect still after that, because they could see how good of a parent somebody's being too. And it really, that song, I mean, brings it to light, a subject that really isn't. Because you think about songs that, all right, what are we going to write? What topic can you write about that hasn't really been talked about? And that's one that you nailed on the head, man, because I think that's probably one of the best songs out there for it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, man. I can't say that myself. I hope that you're right. I am.
I love it.
But I am definitely, I feel blessed to be the vessel that gets to deliver this particular song.
So I want to go rewind a little bit back. When you first, like 2016, you were on American Idol. What made you go out and audition, or what made you think, hey, I'm going to go try this? Like, what was your motive?
You want the long or the short?
What is it? You meant? I mean, it's all good.
It's all good. Come on, Joe. No. So I'll tell the long, because that's just my nature. Jesus, where are you finding these pictures of me? This is hilarious. I've seen 15 different versions of myself.
I saw like the years of you today when I was looking at pictures. I was like, man, this guy's changed some views. I love the beard though, man. The beard was awesome.
I bring it back every now and then. It's in the music video that'll be coming out soon. But
sweet.
No, I was a friend of mine had asked me to sing an Ed Sheeran song at their wedding. And I was naturally, yeah, let's do that. Ed Sheeran writes some great songs. Yeah. And it was the, you know, when your legs don't work like they used to before, you know, everybody used for the wedding for a little while. And yeah. I was sitting outside at my mom and dad's house in the holler in Kentucky playing this beat up ass jalopy guitar that my dad has that I've always loved. It's got stickers all over. It's got a hole in it where I dropped it on a beer bottle when I was younger. And I'm playing this Ed Sheeran song and the chickens are crowing in the background and my mom's videoing me and I didn't realize it. Well, the next morning I wake up to my mom had put me on a GoFundMe thing trying to raise money for me to go to LA and try out for The Voice.
Yeah. And, awesome. All right.
Yeah. So I wake up to $3,700 in this account and I'm like, dude, I was so against these shows. I hated these shows like for the longest time, and yeah. I don't know. There was just something grimy about it to me for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what they are. They're shows. I mean, I had a buddy that was on The Voice. I mean, and he did pretty well. I think he made it to the big rounds on The Voice, and they like came to his hometown, did all the filming and stuff, but like. They pick the good ones and they get through, but still, at the end of the day, they want the ratings.
Yeah, man, it just something about it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way for a long time. Yeah. But what this did was like, I was like, well, in this industry, it's not about you as much as it's about your listeners, right? And people who had heard me sing wanted me, this was proof that they really wanted me to go do this. So I was like, I owe it to the people who were willing to donate this much money. I remember one of my buddies back in Monticello, a guy my age, just working a blue collar 40-hour job at the time, and probably didn't have the money to spare, donated $400 for me to go. And I was just like, all right, I'm doing this. And so my wife and I, we go to LA. I try out for The Voice. No, get sent home. I get off the plane. Precious Harris calls me, this lady that I met when I first started coming to Nashville.
Yeah.
And she's awesome. She put me in a room with my first co-writes. She's a freaking soldier, man. If she loves you, she will take down anything that is in your way. And she calls me. She's like, hey, do you want to try out for American Idol? And I was like, I just got done doing The Voice. I don't really, I don't want to do it. She's like, well, I had to pull a few strings to make this private audition happen. And I'm like, all right, let's do it.
Guess I got to do it now.
Yeah, so probably shouldn't have told that part of the story, honestly, whatever. Anyway, so I go in and, there's the cow call, and then there's also like you can submit videos or whatever. And she had submitted my video and she happened to know somebody that worked. They gave me a shot. So I go in and I sing this Adele song, but I got the key wrong. And I'm singing this Adele song and I realize about three words in, the high note ain't happening. So I shriek. And they're like, no, no, no. And then I was walking out and they're like, just come back and sing something you can actually sing. And that pissed me off when they said that.
So this is in front of the judges.
Yeah. So this was the preliminary judges. Oh, the ones before. Yes. Yeah, before them. So, they were like, I was like, okay, I'm going to sing a song called Barely Alive by the Johnson Brothers, Chris Stapleton. And this dude rolled his eyes at me. And, I was like, I sang it and I put the capo in the right spot. So I hit the right note and they were like, how would you feel about going to meet, Keith Urban, Harry Connick Jr. and J-Lo in Little Rock, Arkansas. And I was like, did you say, how would you feel about meeting J-Lo? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, duh.
So, you want to meet her now though, after that new album cover dropped.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Oh, you don't want to see it. It'll be in your head for days. No.
No, man. She is definitely a very stunning individual. But and she was sweet as she could be. But I went to Little Rock, did that. Went to California, and I was like in Hollywood. I got to sing in Dolby Theater. That was so cool. But I was like, I realized real quick, this was no place for a hillbilly. And so I ended up. I lost passion for that show real quick. And there were some good folks on that show who I'm still in contact with, but it sent me back to Nashville with a lot more drive and a new work ethic that that I like to credit Keith Urban for helping me find.
Nice, man.
Through a little,
you've been in touch with like him or anybody like that, like, yeah, like have you ever seen him, like does he know who you are still? And or yeah.
Dude, I haven't been in touch with any of them, but I did get Keith's email right before we released My Boy, and nice. I sent him maybe a little bit too long of a letter, but it was authentic, so yeah, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I had a guy on a couple weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, Mitch Rozelle, diehard Garth fan, and all he did was get Garth's email, send him a letter. And he had Garth's first number one cut in like 15 years. Ask me how I know.
Hey, man.
And email.
What a great song. And, yeah. And Mitch, I haven't met him, but
great guy. I think
he works with my buddy Lee, who's a writer on My Boy, and, yeah, and just speaks volumes about Mitch. So great. Kudos to that dude. But yeah, I sent him this letter. I haven't heard back from him. No telling if he got it or not. But
yeah,
that dude was really instrumental, and he may not know it, but he was really instrumental in making me realize that it was going to take more than what I thought if I wanted to make it. And I still haven't made it, but we are Started at the bottom, now we in the middle.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I love that. So I heard, I was listening to a few things, and you talked about your inspiration comes from driving in cars. And there's just a few things that, like, you've talked about that one I mentioned that I was like, dude, deja vu moments and this and that. So when I get a new Eric Church album, my I get in the car. Sometimes I might roll something up, I don't know. And I just cruise until the end of that album's over. Like, I'll just listen to the entire album, turn around, listen to it all over again. And that's how I kind of take in my music, is in the car. So when you get inspiration for you, I mean, how is kind of like, if you're feeling like a little creative, you just jump in the car and say, hey, we're just going to go for a ride, man. And I know I was just kind of looking at pictures today. I can see you're a huge fan of cars and drive a little fast sometimes. But who's on the radio when you're driving a little too fast? Probably some church.
Yeah, man. Some church. I'm still a very much diehard Steve Earle fan as well. So, yeah. You know, that Guitar Town record is one of the most badass records to ever be made. And to play while you're driving fast. But no, cars are a huge part of my culture.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was a car guy, and that definitely was instilled in me through working on cars and driveway with my dad from the time I can remember. But dude, when most teenagers were staying up looking at, y'all see how redneck I've got my flag taped up there? I couldn't figure it out. But when most young teenagers were staying up late at night, maybe looking at some unsavory things on the internet, I was covering up the computer with a blanket so my mom wouldn't hear the dial-up internet connecting, so I could get on Car Domain and look at, you know, 67 Fairlanes and 49 Fords and 51 Mercuries. And
the old AOL dial-up.
Do what now?
The old AOL dial-up.
Yeah, man. Oh, dude, I wish I could make the noise that it made. Do
you still remember your AOL username?
We didn't have AOL.
No. I'm 38. You're 32, you said? Yeah, so you're about 6 years behind.
Yeah, AOL, it was still around when I was a kid, but we had something else. I can't remember what it was. But no, man. I mean, so cars were directly associated with music for me. I was working on cars with my dad in the driveway, listening to music, learning about lyrics and stories, and I was listening to music in the backseat of my mom's car as a kid every day of my life. And so that's definitely transposed over into my writing process. Sometimes just the other day, a friend of mine, Luke Preston, co-writer friend, and I were coming back from Hartsville, Tennessee, riding back roads and writing a chorus to a song that we're going to finish with either ourselves or pull somebody in on sometime soon. But I get a lot of ideas that way, and I do consume my music that way. Maybe there's a time every now and then we're dabbling the greenery and just put some headphones on late at night and turn them up as loud as you can and enjoy music that way. I don't know.
I got lucky here. I live here in Chicago, and it went from illegal to essential in about 3 months. And I hopped on that board and got a job in the cannabis industry real quick. So got on that industry and was like, all right, we're going to do this real quick. And it's not a bad thing, man. I kind of like it. A few things before you kind of move on to our episode that I kind of want to bring in. Of course, it's the stuff I want to touch on the most. But you quoted, or you said in, I think, one of your interviews on YouTube, something about a square peg in a round hole. You said for a while you avoided Nashville. Like, you just didn't feel like you fit. And you kind of felt like you were the square peg in a round hole in Nashville a little bit. Or what was keeping you – what made you feel that way? What was keeping you from Nashville? What did you like about it?
Oh, man, first off, I want to start by saying that I'm a fan of many different kinds of music, and so I'm not putting anyone down in any way here. I enjoyed, like, what was going on a little bit. I think Florida Georgia Line came out and did something that was way against the grain and confused the shit out of people. And for that, it was badass, and the writing was top-notch. Mm-hmm. What I started to notice was, like, people coming in behind them and sounding very similar. And so this sound kind of took over, and I didn't know how to connect with it. Yeah. You know, I could hear the stories in, like, what's that song that they had? I think Thomas Rhett and Chris Tompkins wrote it, Round Here or something. I can't remember what it was, but the stories were very similar. If you read the lyrics out, you're like, man, this sounds to me like a friggin' Eric Church song or a Steve Earle song, like talking about growing up in small town, rural America. But I was having trouble connecting with the sound and didn't know how in the world that someone that came from more of a more organic and raw background, I didn't know how it was going to work. And to the point that I was like, I was just scared to waste my time down here. You know, and then something really cool happened. My buddies have been trying to get me to come to Nashville and write. And I was just like, man, you know, my band likes to make fun of me because on my EPK, I just say it wasn't my scene, which I don't know what, I don't know how many scenes I've ever had, but
for everybody, I think Nashville has definitely changed over the last 10 years. I think the whole, everything I want to talk about real quick before we move on. You do your running thoughts and you talk about a lot about, I know you're running by a house and you said, well, back in Kentucky, I could have a bigger home for about the same price. And I mean, that's what you get around Nashville. It's just, I live in Chicago, man. I could see it now. When I was living in Mississippi, we paid $500 a month for like a 3-bedroom, 1-acre rent. And like this little town in Mississippi, we come up here, our mortgage is like $1,800, $1,900, and over half of that's taxes almost. It's like, damn.
Yeah, dude. Well, things are definitely different.
So I did quickly bring about your running thoughts. I love it, dude. I love that you do this. If you guys have not watched this, you can find it on his Instagram. You got into running this year or recently, and you just kind of just ramble. And I was telling my wife, I like this because I almost want to do this when I'm in the car. Because we talked about like thoughts in the car. And like when I'm in the car, man, I get all these thoughts, just crazy shit in my head that I just want to talk about. And so you do it while you're running. And what made you start doing that? But like, in the long run, what makes it inspirational for you? Because for me, listening to it, dude, you talk about a lot of cool stuff. And I know one time you mentioned like bipolar and some different things. So kind of like you talk about like your struggles, but you're helping us at the same time with ours. So what got you to do all that?
Well, dude, I really appreciate that. What got me to do that was two brilliant women on my team. One being my social media helper, Lindsay, over at Gorilla. I think that's how they pronounce it. They help me with my social media. I'm very active on my social media. Like I answer the messages and stuff, but they help me with posts, just keeping me straight because I'm ADD ridiculous. But her and then Amanda Cates over at Maverick, who I'm with for management. I'd been just doing these random stories where I would just be running and go live on my stories.
Yeah.
And talk about stuff, and they were like, well, why don't we just do this? Why don't we do something about this where people can have it longer and interact with it? And what we started seeing was, you know, people were not only enjoying it, but people were like messaging me and being like, hey, I seen your run thoughts, and I went out and walked 0.7 miles today, and I haven't done that in God knows how long. And I was just like, okay, so now we got people who are being inspired. So that in turn inspired me to continue. And the last one, like we just put one out last week, and I was talking about, you know, just, you know, it's kind of human nature to care what people think sometimes, and how it's so easy to put out our best foot forward on social media. So that gives me an opportunity to just kind of get lost in what I'm talking about and really introduce you to who I am in my head movies.
I love your different hats in these different pictures, man. It makes me think of another Kentucky guy, Billy Ray.
Billy Ray, baby, come on.
I'm going to tell you, I will be the first guy to admit I was the biggest Billy Ray Cyrus fan you'd ever met. So my love for him is after Achy Breaky and before Hannah Montana. That little period of his career was some of the best, like Storm of the Heartland, Trail of Tears. That shit was some of the best stuff out there. 90s country.
Man, he's a Kentucky treasure, yep, for sure. That hat there was made by my friend Gigi over at Nashville Hat Works. I have a few of her hats. She is amazing. So if anybody wants a badass custom made hat, go see Gigi.
I love your style because we briefly talked about all these photos. Your style. So if you, I don't know if it's you or your wife or whoever your stylist is, man, they nail it on the head, man, because you have a nice style.
Well, I appreciate it, brother. I just, I grew up seeing people like Johnny Depp and Steven Tyler and Keith Richards in Rolling Stone magazines and stuff, and being like, man, what those dudes wear is cool. And it kind of, I guess it just naturally came over onto me. You know, I've always wore a ring here and there or a necklace or something, whatever it might be.
You're a performer, you're an artist. You got to, dude. You have to have something. So my last question before we kind of move on to our hot seat and get you to perform a couple songs for us. On your Running Thoughts video, you talked briefly about a Steve Harvey YouTube video that he talks about. If no one's seen it, go watch it. Type it in, Steve Harvey Jump. And it's talking about a moment in your life when it comes to a point where you have to jump. If you used to stand there and don't really do anything, the whole world's going to pass you by. You got to take the jump. What was your jump moment? When did you jump?
Man, I jumped. I was working construction. I was digging ditches and pouring concrete in Alabama, Coleman, Alabama. And I, like, nothing against those dudes because they are freaking salt of the earth and some of the hardest working dudes out there. I know because I've worked right alongside of them. But I could not stand it. I couldn't stand doing it. And I went to my buddy's dad who had a production company in Monticello, Kentucky, and I said, man, I just want to be around music. And he said, show up here in 2 weeks and start helping us load these trucks and go out on these shows. So I quit my job there. My buddy Steve Rich, who was my foreman at the time, I got mad and threw my shovel and was like, I'm done with this shit. And he said, I've been waiting for you to say that because he wanted me to go after music. So I guess that was one jump. There's been many jumps. I jumped off that cliff and ended up hitting a little ledge underneath it and being there for a minute and having to jump again. But, hey, man, the biggest hurdle seems to be with people like myself. The biggest hurdle was always money. I come from a yeah, right town, you know.
Yeah.
It's a town where it's like big dreams. Yeah, right. How you going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I came from a social class that maybe that – you know, made it that way. What's up, man?
Yeah, well, I had Ray Scott on. He has a song called, I think it was Plowboy. And it's talking about, like, that's his job. Like, he's just a plowboy. And he talks about he's going to go to a big city to be an artist. He's like, well, what's going to happen when the harvest comes? We still need you here. You still are going to come back here. And that's just something. Yeah, you're always at back there. I mean, you got to jump sometime and not go back. You just got to do it. And,
well, amazing things can happen, too. You know, when I finally just was like, I went to my wife and I said, honey, I need 4 months. Is there any way that you can float us for 4 months and let me see if I can start making some money with music some way? And, man, I got to hand it to her. Like, she used credit cards, whatever she had to do. She gave me that 4 months. An amazing thing happened at the end of that 4 months. I started making money. And I was making better money playing shows and selling T-shirts than I was with a construction job or anything. So
my wife and I have that goal, too, but more of a four-year.
There was also an amazing couple out of Ohio who had me play a couple shows for them, and the Beckemeyers, Ron and Jan Beckemeyer, they were so awesome. They helped me out when I was down and out, and just anything I needed to keep the motor running, they supplied it. And and dude, that's not only them, but other people have came along in my life who have showed up in times when I was in need and too proud to ask for help, but they could tell there was something there, I guess, and they wanted to be a part of it. And I'm humbled and honored that they would help me in the way they have.
Well, if you ever come through Chicago and need a couch crash on you, I got you, buddy.
Hey, that's the Broken Arrows, baby. That's my boys right there.
Is that your band?
Yeah, man, they're family.
That is awesome. So before we move on and get you to play a couple tunes for us, I have a thing I do every week called Hot Seat. We normally have a music behind it. We're not going to do that this week. Yeah, don't hit that. We're on the wrong menu, so you're going to get some weird noises if you hit that right now. I don't know. It's going to be kind of like when we brought him on the intro. I don't know what happened with that. So I'm just going to run through these. There's just 9 questions. They're supposed to be like a rapid fire pace. So let's see what you can do. Your dream Crossroads episode, you and another artist, so another genre, who would you want to do a Crossroads with?
Oh, another genre?
Yeah, if you had to pick like another artist that's kind of opposite of you that you think you'd mesh well with and did like a Crossroads episode, who would you want to do one with? Like if Church did one, he always said Bruce Springsteen. Who would be your Bruce Springsteen?
Probably John Fogerty.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
That'd be a lot of fun.
I saw, see, this is why I don't have music today. I had a picture I was going to show and I don't know what I do with it now. It was, you were standing in front of a John Fogerty picture. You know, is this all? Oh, yeah. This guy's a Fogarty fan. I love it. So I love that you said that. I'm a huge Fogarty CCR fan. I don't know what the hell I do with that.
Oh, I'm Fogarty solo record, like Blue Moon Swamp, Gunslinger. Like, that's my Fogarty jams right there.
I was center field, dude. I loved, like, my dad grew me up on center field because I was playing baseball at a young age, and he'd play that song for me, dude, and get me up and going. So, oh, here we go. So did you go to Fogarty's hometown? I think this photo might be, I don't know.
No, that was here in Berry Hill, just south of Nashville.
Okay.
Cool little area that's kind of like the Music Row 2.0.
Oh, nice, dude. All right. So, all right, the next one will be your first cassette tape you ever owned.
My first what?
Cassette tape.
Oh, Guitar Town.
Oh, sweet. All right.
I stole it from my dad.
What's your – yeah, I can't read these things. What's your hometown famous for?
Oh, Lord.
That creek, right?
Yeah, Caney Creek. I don't want to say the wrong thing.
Yeah, right. You'll have everybody from home calling. What the hell did you say that for, dude?
Hey, man.
Say that, man. It's like Fight Club.
I don't know, man. It's just an amazing, very American town.
That's awesome. What's one song you wish you wrote?
Oh, one song I wish I wrote. There are so many. We were talking about one earlier. I sure as hell wish I wrote Can't Take It With You. That was the song that kind of turned me from doing the rock band scene to wanting to write country music.
And definitely, I mean, and that's one thing. We'll veer off this real quick. One thing I've definitely learned, or I felt with LV when I first started listening to him, is how similar you are to Eric Church. I'm a huge, hard Eric Church fan. If you guys are just tuning in, but like, you kind of do a lot of things your own way. And especially, I mean, your songs, you paint pictures with them. And it's really hard to do sometimes. And unless you're on a pickup truck with a beer in your hand. But you really paint a picture with your songs. And there's really not many artists and songwriters out there that are still doing that. I mean, a lot of Nashville people don't know are, I call them, glorified karaoke singers. So I love when I see the singer-songwriter still coming out that could actually still paint a song like Bob Ross, dude. I mean.
Yeah, man.
You're in your front when you do that. So
I, you know, Eric, I'm obviously not calling Eric old or anything. He's still killing it. And he's probably only in his 40s. But when Sinners Like Me came out, I was 17, 18 years old and chasing him around watching his shows with my buddy Caleb Carnes. But all those songs, I think what Eric's super strong at is writing those very image-driven retrospective songs. So all the songs he was singing was like things that I was living currently.
Mm-hmm.
And so definitely, man, I mean, I get the comparison sometimes. I would never want to write a song and Eric hear it and be like, oh, this dude's trying to sound like me, because that's not the freaking case at all.
I'll just send you a link for a song. He did Hard Way from the Sinners album, but he didn't do it slow. He did it fast with his band. The coolest thing ever, dude.
Dude, please send it over. I'd love to hear it. But he was definitely an influence, man. So you're gonna hear some of that in my music simply for that reason. And you know, dude, definitely. Sometimes when I'm writing a song, I'm like, that. There's been times where I've been writing a line and I'd be like, if Eric heard this line, or if Steve Earle heard this line, or if John Fogarty heard this line, would they think that? Would they sing something like that? Would they approve of that? And I think that's important. You know, when I'm writing my music, I would like my mentors, if you will, to approve of the way I paint those pictures.
That is awesome, dude. So the last couple of songs I got for you, what was your favorite vehicle you ever owned? So your car that you actually owned so far, what has it been?
My favorite car I've ever owned is probably the one I have right now. I've always been a Mustang guy. I had a Fox Body Mustang for a couple weeks when I was a teenager. I never got to drive. My cousin wrecked it and bent the frame, and my dad took it in, and we were going to fix it up, but we didn't. But I had a 74 Mustang. I drove around in college a little bit. I traded a set of 20-inch wheels for that I bought for like $300. I had a 97 Mustang, and then when these cars came out in 2015, when that new body style came out, I was like, my God, that's a beautiful car. And dude, I'm a Ford fan through and through. Like, the Ford versus Ferrari movie is amazing, but there's a book that movie's based off of that a lot of people don't know, called Go Like Hell.
Okay.
And that movie, as amazing as it is a third as good as this book is. But Yeah, that Mustang, the Hillbilly Hellraiser, as it's been dubbed, is probably the loudest car on Music Row, but it's my favorite I've ever had.
All right, so the last few I got for you. What was your first job there? First 9-to-5, your first paying gig, what were you doing?
I worked at Tinker's BP in my hometown. It was a full-service gas station. I was changing oil, doing tune-ups.
The shirt that said LV on it.
Had the shirt that said LV. Oh, you've seen the video. You know what's up.
I had to ask it, though. Yeah, I saw that part. All right. Let's see. Your favorite getaway location, man. If you got some time off the road, you're just going to take the wife and kid. Where are you going?
Man, my father-in-law built a semi-primitive cabin up in eastern Kentucky in McCreary County, and that place is really, really special to me. I've taken a few songwriter friends up there, and it always delivers. So, I mean, number one, that's the number one place I like to go and get away. Number two, Florida, baby, come on.
She has another church movie, man. Taking songwriters out for a retreat, dude. Look at that.
Yeah, man, I'm just a redneck.
I love it.
From the South, we go down to the Panhandle, like John Mellencamp says.
Yeah, we do. I lived in Mississippi. It was like what, 5 hours, I think. I could get to Pensacola in like 4 or 5 hours. So like, weekend, let's go.
I got a buddy down there. Who owns a fishing charter. I met him through doing shows in Wisconsin when they lived up there, and he moved to Fort Myers and has a fishing charter and has this 15-year-old daughter named Jade, who is absolutely, like, I promise you, you're going to know who this girl is one day. She's amazing. So I not only get to go down there and fish on a badass boat with my buddy Matt, but I get to write amazing songs with his prodigy daughter as well.
What was this place in Wisconsin that he had?
I went up and did a run up there, a 5-day run with Russell, one of the co-writers on My Boy. We just went and did like a songwriter thing, played at a couple bars, Sloppy Joe's in Hubertus, Wisconsin, and Bugsy's downtown Milwaukee and stuff.
Damn, I almost missed that. I'm 45 minutes from Milwaukee.
Damn, man, I wish you could have been there. We had a blast.
Damn, I got to keep an eye on that for next time. All right, the last couple we have, and then we'll keep moving on. Your favorite Halloween costume you ever wore?
Man. The scarecrow, because I got a kiss from Mandy Farron that night, and I was like in fifth grade, so that was probably it. Something about me and Mandy. Sorry, baby. It was like when I was 7. It's okay.
There you go. And then the last one, what's something on your bucket list, man? You've already achieved so much, but what's something else that you maybe a venue you want to play, or just something you still want to do, something that's on your bucket list that you want to achieve still?
Man, I would absolutely love to go on. This might sound silly because I see so many people do it a lot, but I would love to go on like a multi-day elk hunt somewhere in the mountains and like just be, for once in my life, be miles and miles from anyone except for the boys I'm hunting with.
Somebody says Opry. That's already going to happen. I mean, that minute live show start up again, he'll be on it. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many bucket bucket list things.
You can't say Opry, something that's going to happen. I mean, Opry.
Yeah, man. I mean, take me to the Opry. I would, like, if the Opry calls, I don't care what's on the calendar. We'll be there. So.
All right, man. Well, we're going to close out the show with two songs, if you don't mind. Definitely My Boy. We'll finish up with it. But the first one, if you don't mind doing for me, My Mississippi, if you don't mind, and kind of set that up for me and let me know about it. I just kind of heard about it for the first time the other day. I used to live in Mississippi, but I love the feel of the song, man.
Well, thanks, dude. I'm gonna take my headphones off.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Let's see here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Good deal. So My Mississippi. There's this real, real cool dude named Jacob Miller, who trying to make sure I got my volume turned up right here. Real cool dude named Jacob Miller, who happens to play bass for my band, The Broken Arrows. And he moved over here when he was 17 from L.A. He loves country music, and he wanted to be a songwriter. And he kept telling me that he was writing these songs and everything. And I kept telling him I would write with him, but I was busy being booked by the publishers and everything. And it just kept, you know, getting pushed back or whatever. He stopped by my house one night at like 11 o'clock when I was about to go to bed. And he's like, man, I've got an idea for this song called Mississippi. Yeah. I was like, okay, what's it about? I'm from Kentucky. And he was like,
Well, it's about that girl that got away and everything she has in common with the Mississippi River. And I was at the apartment building that I lived in at the time there on Music Row. The person sitting at the front desk that night was cool enough to, like, let us stay late in there and everything. We just dug into it, man. And I couldn't identify with that because, you know, I've been married for so long and I couldn't really write about the girl that got away. But yeah. One thing we can all relate to in a relationship or a long-term relationship is, like, every now and then there's times when you feel like you're losing each other, right? Like, you gotta pull them back in. And that's where, like, the fishing reference came in so strong for me because my wife and I, you know, we might have been in a fight that night or whatever. And I was like, dude, you're being an asshole. Quit being that way.
All right. We'll go ahead and give you the stage, and I'll be back for your second song. If you don't mind to give you the next two songs, I'll be back.
All right, brother.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Hey there, Mississippi, looks like the water's getting rough. I picked a hell of a day for fishing, the way the wind keeps picking up. I know I look crazy on this muddy bank, but it's the only place I thought I wouldn't think. Hey there, Mississippi, I know a girl a lot like you. I bet she's tearing right through the country, and there's nothing I can do to slow her down. Your love's like a river, you can't stop it when it's running out and headed south, like my Mississippi, yeah. I know all about the ones that get away. If I know anything, so it's no surprise I didn't catch the only bite I had all day. Well, I wonder if my luck will ever change. Is the chance of her ever coming back anything like a chance of rain? Hey there, Mississippi, I know a girl a lot like you. I bet she's tearing right through the country, and there's nothing I can do to slow her down. Your love's like a river, you can't stop it when it's running out. It's sad, like my Mississippi, yeah. My Mississippi, yeah. Hey there, Mississippi, I know a girl not like you. I bet she's tearing right through the country, and there's nothing I can do to slow her down. Turn her around. Love's like a river, you can't stop it when it's running out. Hit it sail like my Mississippi, yeah. My Mississippi, yeah. Sit by me.
Dude, I have to jump in real quick. That was badass, dude. I love that song. Just one of my favorites.
Man, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want me to sing some more?
Yeah, well, I was going to do my boy real quick, and then we'll close out the show, and then we'll bring it back for a couple more on the after show. If you don't mind.
Awesome, bro. All right.
Yes.
Let me get you just temperamental. We'll go
and finish off with my boy, and then we'll take a 15-minute break and bring you back on and have a good time. So if you guys are out there listening, if you guys had a great time, thank you so much for tuning in. Drop a like. Make sure we'll drop his social media links. Check out LB everywhere you can find him. We'll come back after this song and close up the show. So
thank you, guys. I appreciate y'all tuning in. And, dude, I've had a blast on here. Thank you so much.
Man, this has been one of my favorites.
Hell yeah, buddy. All right. I guess the stage is mine. So this is my boy. He ain't got my smile, that don't bother me a bit. He's got somebody else's eyes I'm seeing myself in. I'm holding on to every moment, God knows I missed the view. The day we met, I knew I had some catching up to do. He ain't my blood, ain't got my name, but if he did, I'd feel the same. I wasn't there for his first steps, but I ain't missed a ball game yet. And that ain't ever gonna change. I can never walk away. Yeah, he's my son, and that's my choice. He ain't my blood, but he's mine. He's my boy. He hit me like a train the first time he called me dad. In a 3-6-figure crayon picture with all of us holding hands. His mama said, I understand if it's too soon for this. I did a little finish, she took it to the kitchen and I stuck it on the fridge. He ain't my blood, ain't got my name, but if he did, I'd feel the same. I wasn't there for his first steps, but I ain't missed the ball game yet. That ain't ever gonna change. I can never walk away. Yeah, he's my son, and that's my choice. He ain't my blood, but he's mine. He's my boy. He's Saturday morning cartoons. He's aching to sleep in your room. He's bigger than the plans I had. He's making me a better man. He ain't my blood, ain't got my name, but if he did, I'd feel the same. I wasn't there for his first steps, but I ain't missed the ball game yet. And that ain't ever gonna change. I can never walk away. Yeah, he's my son, and that's my choice. He ain't my blood, but he's my boy. Yeah, he's my boy.
I don't think you have to be a step-parent to enjoy that song, man. That is amazing, amazing, amazing. Dude, thank you for that song, first and foremost, because like I said, it's going to stand the test of time for the longest time, so thank you for that song. Just from being a dad, just listening to it, like I said, it doesn't matter from step-parent or anything. I mean, we can relate to that song, so I really appreciate such a powerful song, man. It's changing everything. So
Thank you, buddy.
But thank you for spending the last hour with us. We ran a little bit over, which I'm totally cool with. We're going to take like a quick 15-minute break and bring you right back on and for our Patreon after show. So go ahead and grab you a drink or hang out for a minute, and we'll bring you back on.
All right, brother. I appreciate you.
All right. I'll send you an email real quick and let you know what time and everything.
All right. God bless y'all.
Talk to you, man. Thank you. Guys, another amazing show. I had such a blast tonight talking with LB. Probably one of the coolest times ever. Or actually not ever, but just one of the coolest shows. I've been waiting for this show to happen, and I knew I was going to have a good time with him because I've been doing some research and just digging into this guy's career and just amazing stuff that he's been doing. So, yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed it. Check out our Patreon after show tonight. We're going to get him to do a couple more songs. I'm going to get him to do the song sometimes, I'm telling you. I know he's probably, he grunted at it earlier, but I'm going to get him to do it because it's one of my favorite songs. It's a damn good song. I was going to bring up another one called She Quit Me, but if you guys have not heard She Quit Me or Sometimes by LB Shane, make sure you go ahead and get on YouTube after this show tonight and check it out. So let me go ahead and drop that link real quick for you guys. If you guys want to go on, we will be back live about 8:25, 8:30. It'll be on our Patreon page on Facebook. We will send you the link if you do decide to join over the next 10 minutes. So that, yeah, other than that, man, I had a blast tonight. I really hope you guys enjoyed it. We covered a lot of ground with LV tonight, and I hope you guys learned something new. Next week is going to be another one. That's going to be amazing. So cannot wait. I have a Canadian artist coming on, Jade Eagleson. That's just going to blow everybody away. Just wait till you guys find out this guy. Go ahead. I'll see you next week.
The Gaining Fast on Memphis podcast with Aaron Schreiber is brought to you by Arlo Revolution. As we close the book on another chapter, remember, music gives a soul to the universe, wings to the mind, flight to the imagination, and life to everything. Next week, Aaron connects more melodies and memories with other fans and the artists they love. Thanks for being a part of this musical journey, and we'll see you next time on the Gaining Fast on Memphis podcast with Aaron Schreiber.